Now it's working. Okay. Ready. Okay, this morning we'll be in chapter 17 of 2 Samuel. For the ones new today, I can't go back and cover everything I've covered this morning, so we'll just have to take off where we're at and just latch on the best you can. And if you've got any questions, just ask, take notes, say whatever you got to do, okay? Chapter 17, verse 1. Moreover, Ahithophel said unto Absalom, let me now choose out 12,000 men, and I will rise and pursue after David this night. And I will come upon him while he is weary and weak-handed, and will make him afraid, and all the people that are with him shall flee, and I shall smite the king only. And I will bring back all the people unto you. The man whom thou seekest is as if all returned, so all the people shall be at peace, or in peace. And the saying pleased Absalom well, and all the elders of Israel. Then said Absalom, call now Hushai the Archite also, and let us hear what he has to say. When Hushai was come to Absalom, Absalom spoke to him, saying, Ahithophel has spoken after this manner. Shall we do after his saying? If not, speak thou. And Hushai said to Absalom, the counsel that Ahithophel has given is not good at this time. For, said Hushai, you knowest thy father and his men, and they be mighty men, and they be chafed in their minds, as a bear robbed of her whelps in the field, and your father is a man of war, and will not lodge with the people. Behold, he is now hid in some pit or some other place, and it will come to pass when some of them be overthrown at the first, that whosoever heareth it will say, there is a slaughter among the people that follows Absalom. And he also that is valiant, whose heart is in the heart of a lion, shall utterly melt, for all Israel knows that thy father is a mighty man, and they which be with him are valiant men. Therefore I counsel that all Israel be generally gathered to you, from Dan even to Beersheba, as the sand that is by the sea for multitude, and that you go to battle in your own person. So shall we come upon him in some place where he shall be found, and we will light upon him as the dew falls on the ground, and of him and of all his men that are with him there shall not be left so much as one. Moreover, if he be gotten into a city, then shall all Israel bring ropes to the city, and we will draw it to the river until there be not one small stone found there. And Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel, for the Lord has appointed to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel to the intent that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom. Then said Hushai to Zadok and to Abiathar the priest, thus and thus did Ahithophel counsel Absalom and the elders of Israel, and thus have I counseled. Now therefore send quickly and tell David, saying, lodge not in the night, this night in the plains of the wilderness, but speedily pass over, lest the king be swallowed up and all the people that are with him. Now Jonathan and Ahimaaz stayed by Enrogel for they might not be seen to come into the city. And a wench went and told them, and they went and told King David. Nevertheless, a lad saw them and told Absalom, but they went both of them away quickly and came to a man's house in Bahurim, which had a well in his court, whither they went down. And the woman took and spread a covering over the well's mouth and spread ground corn thereupon, and the thing was not known. And when Absalom's servants came to the woman, to the house, they said, where is the Ahimaaz and Jonathan? And the woman said to them, they be gone over the brook of water. And when they had sought and could not find them, they returned to Jerusalem. And it came to pass, and they were departed, they came up out of the well, and went and told King David, and said unto David, arise, pass quickly over the water, for thus hath Ahithophel counseled against you. Then David arose, and all the people that were with him, and they passed over Jordan by the morning light. There lacked not one of them that was not gone over the Jordan. And when Ahithophel saw that his counsel was not followed, he saddled up his ass and arose and got him to his house, to his city, and put his house in order and hanged himself and died, and was buried in the sepulchre of his father. Then David came to Mahanaim, and Absalom passed over Jordan, he and all his men of Israel with him. And Absalom made Amasa captain of the host instead of Joab, which Amasa was a man's son whose name was Ithra, an Israelite, that went into Abigail, the daughter of Naash, sister to Zeruiah, Joab's mother. That's tongue twisters. So Israel and Absalom pitched in the land of Gilead. And it came to pass when David was come to Mahanaim that Shobi, the son of Naash of Rabbah, to the children of Ammon, and Machir, the son of Amiel, of Lodabar, and Bazareli, who? The Gilead of Rogelim, brought beds and basins and earthen vessels and wheat and barley and flour and parched corn and beans and lentils and parched pulse and honey and butter and sheep and cheese of kine for David and for the people that were with him. For they said, the people was hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. And if you'd like to say that three times real fast, that's tongue twisters. I do the best I can to pronounce these words, and the pronunciation is not the important thing. It's the understanding of what the word means. Okay? So let's go back and look from the first and see what God's got for us in here. We know that the word, what starts out in the first verse there, Ahithophel. His name means what? A brother of folly. Okay. The first word there is Ahithophel, speaks of brother of folly. Said to Absalom, his name means brother of peace, now choose out what? 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue after David this night. Why 12,000? Well, it's the government of God. And see, they were still living under what at that time? The law. So the law is, there's 12 tribes, and we're going to vote on it. It's a democratic thing, you know. And under the law, and under the church realm today, most people, they still think they're under the law, and they want to vote for everything. It's not about voting. God said what he wants, and God's going to get what he wants, and you can vote all you want, and it won't change a thing, will it? So you've got to let God be God and do what he wants. Whether you understand, doesn't make any difference. God's still going to get what he wants. But anyway, this law is coming in here, and they want to pursue and destroy David. What do you think David represents in our lives today? It's the presence of God in your life, and when you come in with this new understanding, it's not new, it's just something remembered, guess what people's going to try to do to you? They're going to pursue you and try to destroy you. One thing that human beings really like is comfort. And when you get in that comfort zone, they don't like to be moved out. How many wants to be moved off your couch and thrown out on the porch? See? You want to get in that comfort zone and you want to stay there. But God is faithful, true or false. And God's faithful not only to bless you, but sometimes he blesses you and it's not comfortable. And he might throw you out on the street to sleep a while. Backseat your car, anything. You never know, huh? It can happen. And we can think we've got everything locked up, and all of a sudden tomorrow everything has changed. See? And we get too comfortable, and we get so comfortable in this zone that we think we're righteous because we're in this zone. See? God's grace and mercy got us in this zone to where we have the comfort zone we have. Think about all the people in the third world countries today that don't even know what it is to have a roof over their head. Do you think they're any less children of God? See? Sometimes I think it's a curse being in this country. Because we've got so much stuff, our hands are so full, we can't reach out and bless somebody else. See? It's too important to protect our stuff. So we've got to watch these things. But they're going to pursue David, and in your life, the Christ in there is going to try to be smothered out by the harlot. It says the harlot seeks the precious life in Proverbs, doesn't she? See? And I will come upon him while he is weary and weak-handed and will make him what? The word afraid there literally means to shudder with fear and terror. And all the people that are with him shall flee, and I will smite only the king. Well, that sounds good, but the book says, touch not my anointed, and do my prophets no harm, see, in the Psalm. Religion has no respect for anyone. I'm not talking about God, I'm talking about religion. Because most people relate God and all these church buildings and organizations to being the same thing, and it is not the same thing, is it? Religion has only respect for one thing, and that's self. See, religion is got a humanistic view. I'm right and everybody else is wrong. That's the humanistic view of religion. And nobody could question me because I'm the one standing behind the pulpit. See, that's the view that they have. But see, God is greater than any man or any pulpit or any organization that's ever been on the face of the earth. God can do what he wants without asking anybody's permission. Has any of you got a call from God asking you what you think God should do today? I never have, and I'm not looking for one. I'm going to be satisfied being the servant, and when he wants something, he knows where I'm at. He'll come and get me and tell me what he wants me to do. Till then, I don't have any responsibility except just keep listening. You just keep listening. Okay. But anyway, Ahithophel's coming up with this plan to destroy King David and all of his followers. King David represents the Christ, the head, and his followers represent the body of Christ, the rest of the body of Christ. Well, I'm going to tell you what. Do you know my head is no different than any other part of my body? It's flesh and bone. And see, if we're part of this body with Christ, we're no different than Jesus, the man who was the head. The Christ in him is the same Christ in you. He's my older brother. I got an older brother, and he's no better than me. Whether he think he is or not doesn't make any difference, because he's not. I slept in the same bed with him when I was raised up. I know where he came from. He's no different than me. And you can put on different clothes and look fancy, and that won't make you any better than anybody else, will it? Only in your mind. Okay? And he says, I will bring back all the people to you. The man whom you seek is as if all returned. And the New American Standard has a better version. I'm going to read this from the New American Standard. It says this, and I will bring back all the people to you, and the return of everyone depends on the man you seek. They're saying if he'll give up, we'll bring everybody back. But if he fights, we're going to have to destroy them all. Sounds like a man that's got war in his heart. What do you think? No grace and no mercy. And the saying or the words pleased Absalom well and all the elders of Israel, because they are all living under the same thing. What was it? The law. Under the law, death was the answer to everything. Anybody that disagreed, kill them. I don't think that's the way God looks at it. If it was, most of us wouldn't be here. About 99.9% of us wouldn't be here, right? He'd already wiped us out. Because you know what? I don't even know if any of us ever agreed with God to start with. So if having a disagreement was wrong, then God would have wiped us all out. See, we all have a right to disagree, but we better disagree agreeably. Quit fighting. Okay. Then said Absalom, call Hushai, and his word is hasty. His name means hasty. Call him, he's hasty. The Archite, the long-winded one maybe, huh? And guess where he was from? Guess where he hailed from? Babylon. So you best not get your counsel from Babylon. You know why? Babylon represents confusion, duality. So Absalom was drawing from Babylon, from a Babylonian, and Babylonians can only give you Babylonian thinking, can't they? You want God thinking, you better get a God person to talk to you. David had him in his court also. He was a counselor for David also. David made many mistakes. And it says, and let us hear likewise what he says. Okay? And when Hushai was come to Absalom, Absalom spoke to him, saying, Ahithophel has spoken after this manner. Shall we do after his saying? If not, you speak. He's saying, do you agree with what Ahithophel said? Or do you think you ought to do something else? And Hushai said to Absalom, the counsel that Ahithophel has given you is not good at this time. Okay? And Hushai For Hoshea said, you know your father and his men, that they are mighty men, and they be what in their minds? Well, the word in King James, chafe, but it literally says bitter. If you look up the word, it's the word mara. Anybody ever hear the word mara before? In the book of Ruth? Don't call me Naomi any longer, but call me Mara, because God has dealt bitterly with me. It's the same word. Mara, bitter. Okay? They're bitter in their what? The word mind here should be soul. They're bitter in their souls, because the soul is where all the bitterness is. You can't have bitterness in your spirit, because your spirit is the spirit of God. How could God be messed up? It's an impossibility. Only in the duality of the spirit and flesh mixture do we have a problem. And says there is bitter as a bear robbed of her whelps in the field, and your father is a man of war and will not lodge with the people. He's not going to lodge in a city somewhere, because he's a man of war. He's going to be out there doing what? Doing battle. And that's where we are. Think about it. Even if we come out of the system, what we think we come out of the system and come into what we think is the church realm, what do we immediately begin to do? We do warfare with everybody that does not agree with us. Did God tell us to do that? No. Some preacher came up with that idea. God never told us to war. See, that comes out of the carnal mind, because the carnal mind only knows one thing: retaliation, retaliation, retaliation. You hurt me, I'll hurt you back. But when we come out of that religious system now, we still have to watch that we don't bring all that baggage with us into the truth. In the third day, it says they had to lighten the load with the ship with their own hands. You've got to choose to throw things out. I got to choose no longer to be angry, to be violent, to retaliate, to do any of these things to anybody else. Did Jesus respond to anyone with retaliation, revenge, bitterness, anger? Whatever they did to him, he went as a mute lamb to the slaughter. That means he went silently. He just didn't retaliate. He could have. He had the authority and power, but he had to overrule that to what God wanted. God wanted his image out there. Verse 9, behold, he is hid in some pit or some other place, and it will come to pass when some of them be overthrown at the first, that whosoever hears it will say, there is a slaughter among the people that follow Absalom. So Hushai is giving Absalom some good counsel. He is telling him the truth. David told him, didn't tell him to lie. He just said, you tell me what you tell him, so I know what he knows. It makes things a little easier. So he goes ahead and gives him good advice. You know your father, you know what he'll do. So what he's telling you to do is not going to work. And he said, if at first David gets the first shot on you, you're going to lose your kingdom. Verse 10. And he also that is valiant. Now that word valiant is not correct. It's the word Hebrew word bane, 1121 in the Strong's Hebrew dictionary, and it means son. And what it should say is this: he's a son of virtue, a son of strength. He's talking about David again. This is the Son of God. This is the Christ. This is you. This should be you in here. When we talk about David, that's you. So he's saying, you are a son of what? Son of strength. A son of virtue. See, you. This is you. You ought to be hearing this. This is you being a son of virtue. How many people told you you're crazy? How many people told you don't know God? You're some kind of cult or something. We've all heard this stuff. But if you don't realize that you are a son of virtue and strength, and a son of virtue and strength does not have to prove himself to anybody, does he? A strong man does not have to tell everybody he's strong. A man with authority does not have to stand up and say, I'm the boss. Because as he walks in the room, his authority precedes him. You don't have to tell somebody who you are. If you're Christ, all you've got to do is be who you be. You don't have to change nothing. You don't have to try to make somebody believe I'm a man of God. Because if you're a person of God too, you know what you'll see? You'll see the same thing. You'll see it in me and I'll see it in you. Because we have the same eye, we have the same spirit, we have the same Father. Why couldn't we recognize each other? Why can't I recognize my brothers and sisters? If they got the same mama and the same papa, why shouldn't I? Just because I haven't seen them before doesn't mean I don't recognize them, does it? You know it. How many people have met people like that? You've never met before, but just as soon as you meet them, you feel like you've been your friend all your life. Okay? Why? Because it's the same mama and the same papa. In Joseph's life, Joseph had how many brothers? Anybody know?
11.
He had 11. But how many brothers did he have?
One.
He had one brother and 10 half-brothers. And see, that's what we're dealing with, half-brothers versus brothers. A real brother doesn't act like that half-brother, does he? In the natural, you know, it's a mess. Okay. But anyway, it says that he is a valiant man. This we're talking about the Christ, the son of virtue, whose heart is as the heart of a what? Did the book say that Jesus was of the lion, was a lion of the tribe of Judah? Well, if he's the lion of the tribe of Judah, why wouldn't he have a lion's heart? How many lions you see cowards? I'm not talking about the Wizard of Oz. Okay. How many lions you ever seen that were cowards? They'll fight to the death, won't they? Okay. Now, what kind of heart is that? That's a brave, strong, valiant heart. That's what he's trying to say. We have the strength, we have the knowledge, we have the authority, but we don't use it and wield it as a weapon. You see the difference? When you grow up and mature in Christ, you do not take the Word of God to chop someone's head off. And that's what the church system does. They use it as a weapon to hurt you. And God says, I love you. And I'm supposed to portray to you love. How can I portray to you love when I'm telling you you're bad, you're nasty, and you deserve to burn in hell? Now, how can I encourage you in that? Well, that's what the church's message is. God's message is, I've sent my Son to redeem the earth. And my word will not return unto me void. It shall accomplish what I've sent it there unto to do. Then how could we fail? How can you not have faith? God said you're going to make it. God said He's going to reconcile all creation back to Himself. Aren't you part of creation? Well, then what are you concerned about? If you believe what God said, you can go to sleep tonight and not worry about waking up in some eternal hell that does not exist except in your mind. Isn't it amazing? Just let it be. Let God do what He wants to do. Don't worry about fear. He said God's not giving you a spirit of fear. Well, then who gave it to you? Yeah, He did. That one right there. That thing right between your ears gave it to you if it wasn't the church. If it wasn't the church system, it was the thing between your ears. And I'm sure it came from the people. Okay. And He says, His heart will utterly melt because all Israel knows that your father is a man of virtue. And they be with him are men of virtue also. Guess what? Everyone that comes together, what are we? The message of this book is be reduced to one thing. One. We all come back to the Feast of Tabernacles. The Feast of Ingathering, the Feast of Oneness, that everyone is coming back to their Father. So if we take off in a journey, and I don't care where the journey goes, there's a circular path. You're going to come back to right there where you started. I don't care who you are. I don't care what your course is. God could send you in 5,000 different ways. But when you get done, you're going to come back where you started. And this book tells me where you started. And if you read this book, it'll tell you we all started in Him, in God. So if I start in God, I'm going back to God, then is the journey really important or is it the destination where I'm going to be? I want the destination. I know the journey is going to shape me and make me remember things, but the destination is where I'm going to. See? I know I've got to go back to my Father.
Knowing your destination makes the trip easy.
Sure, because I know where I'm going to end up. And I know I'm going to get there, then all this journey is just going to correct me and chastise me, get me shaped up, but I'm still going where I'm going. Don't look at the situations. Look at the destination. Okay? Verse 11. Therefore, or so, I counsel that all Israel be generally gathered to you from Dan even to Beersheba, as the sand of the as that is by the sea for multitudes. Now this one says a whole bunch. This verse says a whole bunch. Okay? Dan speaks of judgment. The word Dan means judge. And Beersheba means the well of an oath, or the well of sevens. Whenever someone spoke an oath in the Old Testament, it would say they sevened themselves, or they made a covenant with themselves. They sevened themselves. They were making an oath or a covenant. So he says, everyone from the judgment to the covenant, from the Old Testament of judgment to the New Testament of the covenant of grace and mercy and peace and love, all of them should be gathered together to Absalom. And you know what? Guess what? And this next little part of the verse that says, as the sand that is by the sea for multitude. There were three covenants, correct? Abraham had three covenants. And these three covenants was this: dust, sand, and stars. Okay? Dust represents the Passover experience. Sand represents the Pentecostal experience. And stars represent the Tabernacles covenant. Okay? And the book says that these covenants shall always be with us throughout a time. Throughout Olam, it says in the Hebrew. Throughout eternity. Throughout everything. There will always be these three covenants: Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. Dust, sand, stars. Now, if you know anything about covenants, when God made a covenant with Abraham and said, Abraham, your descendants will be more numerous than the dust of the earth. And a few chapters later he says, Abraham, your descendants will be more numerous than the sand of the seashore. Did that wipe out the first covenant? It encompasses it. The dust was encompassed with the sand, and now this covenant covers that whole group, the two groups of people. Now, he comes along later and says, Abraham, look at the sky. Tell them stars there, if you can number them, that's how many your descendants shall be. Okay? Now, that didn't destroy those first two covenants, did it? So we have to realize that the reason I'm where I'm at today is because I went through my Passover experience, and I'm talking about internally, not in the church realm, but in here. I went through my Passover experience. That's my foundation. Anybody ever build a house that knows anything about building knows you build a house, and you set your house on top of a foundation, you set your house on top of that foundation. You don't go back and dig that foundation out when you get done, do you? You leave it in there to hold everything up. But just you don't have to look at it every day, do you? It's called faith. I know there's a foundation under the building we're sitting in. You can't see it, but I put it there. You know why? I watched it go in the ground every day. I know it's there. And I don't have to dig it up to see if it's there. My foundation is supporting me. Correct? And when I step into Pentecost, the rest of the house, to build the walls up and everything, guess what? I know they're going to stand because I know the foundation's under there. Don't have to see it, but I know it's there. And then I go to Tabernacles. I go to my roof. It covers all. And put my roof on. It's going to stand. And see, I can't go back and kick the foundation out and kick the walls out and expect to live under a roof. You got to know that all of this is necessary to get together, to take you to one place. Ties everything together into oneness. Now, if you go to the book of Revelation, see if I can pick it up real quick. It's in Revelation 20, I believe. Yeah. Revelation 20, verse 8. It's talking about the Satan from verse 7. The Satan not being some devil with a pitchfork, but the carnal mind. Shall be loosed out of his prison and shall go out to deceive the what? The nations. These nations, the imaginations. And which are in the what? The four corners of the earth. That means all the earth. Gog and Magog. Do you know what that represents? Gog and Magog. I'll show you in a second. I'll leave it lay there a second. Just go on. To gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the what? Sand of the sea. Now, isn't that what we just talked about back here? They're getting ready to go do battle. And they gathered them up as the sand by the sea to do a battle. You think that's a coincidence? It's the same thing. It's all in the mind, though. Let me go back to it. And they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints. What was they getting ready to do? Take 12,000 men and encompass King David and the saints. The Christ and his saints. Same thing going on here. See, it's that carnal mind encompassing the spirit, which is right inside of it. And he says, let me tell you this. The dust and the sand represents your Passover and Pentecostal experiences. And if there's anybody who cares what you say in truth, it's a Passover and Pentecostal experience people. The worldly people, do they care what you say? But people who are church-oriented, you say something contrary to what their guru has taught them and see what happens. They will immediately encompass you and try to destroy you. That's a fact, isn't it? They'll excommunicate you. They'll try to slander you. They'll throw stones at you. They'll do whatever they can do. So Passover and Pentecost people are the only. That's what Gog and Magog is. It's the Passover and Pentecostal experiences people who are trying to destroy the saints. How many times did the Jewish people try to destroy the prophets of God? Can you count the times? Everyone that he sent to them, they tried to destroy. Why? Because if they can destroy the air, they feel they've got it. See? Competition again, the war. It's not supposed to be about war in our lives, but it is. It's in our head. This is not a war between people, and that's the difference between what we're telling in truth versus the church realm. The church realm says there's bad people out here. And I'm telling you, all people are inherently bad according to this book. And God said he's going to remove the wicked from the earth. True? Well, the wicked he's going to remove is the way you think out of this earth that you live in. That's the most beautiful picture God has ever shown. That he's going to remove the wicked from the earth. Not a people, but the wicked out of my heart and out of your heart. That's the beautiful thing. Okay? And look at the last part of verse 11. He said, you're going to gather all this together as the sand of the sea for multitude, and that you go to battle in your own person. You know what? There ain't nobody can do it for you. There's no preacher on the face of the earth that can save you. There's no preacher that can deliver you from anything. I can't either. Just like Lois mentioned earlier, we've got people saying, I don't need to get your tapes anymore. I need to start doing it myself. I said, thank God they heard me. We got a man from Australia, from Tasmania, that just said that. He said, Dave, I got to start hearing this myself. I said, great. We're still brothers. We're still fellowship. That's good. See, I've done my job with that person. I've got them to the place where now they can do it themselves. And what does a father more want to do than anything than to raise up his children that they can provide for themselves? Don't you have that view for your children? You want to raise them up, train them, that when they get to the age of independence, they can take care of themselves and won't have to be coming back and say, Dad, how do I do this? That you want to train them up when they're young. That's what God's trying to do with us, but most of the time we don't want to. We want somebody else to do it for me. You'd be surprised how many people I hear say, oh, I don't read the Bible. My preacher does that for me on Sunday mornings. I don't pray. My preacher prays on Sunday mornings, at least for a minute, minute and a half. And they think that that's going to help you. You've got to do it yourself. Revelation says the bride has to make herself ready. I got to do some. I got some responsibility of taking care of myself. See? If you put the food in somebody's mouth, you'll probably end up having to chew it. And every day themselves. Okay? Verse 12. So shall we come upon him in some place where he shall be found, and we will light upon him as the dew falls on the ground, and of him and of all the men that are with him, and there shall not be left so much as one. Sounds like the plan changed. First it was just going to be the king, now it's going to be everybody. Get them all. Moreover, if he be gathered into a city, then shall all Israel bring ropes to that city, and we will draw it into the river until there be not one small stone found there. And you know what? There's only one stone anyway. Yeah, the big rock. And Absalom And all the men of Israel said, the counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. You know what they just did here? They had a vote. We like this one better than that one. Okay. First of all, if they believed the man was a prophet, why would they have to have a second one? If it's God speaking, why do you have to have a second one? Okay. So it tells me he has no faith. There was no confidence in the man, so he's just trying to get whichever sound bearer. What do you think about it? What do you think, Mike? What do you think, Bob? What do you think, Paul? Keith, what do you think? See, God's not democratic. God is theocratic. And theocratic means God says it, and that's what it is. And there's no voting to it, whether you like it or not. God still gets what he wants. So I believe in theocracy, not democracy. I just happen to live in a country that is democratic. Okay. Because the Lord has appointed to do what? Defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel. No, the word defeat is frustrate. He appointed it to frustrate the good counsel of Ahithophel, the brother of folly, to the intent that the Lord bring evil upon Absalom. Uh-oh, somebody figured something out here. Somebody's got a little discernment because they said, figured out God's setting this thing up. God brought it in to frustrate him, to bring evil upon Absalom. Then said Hushai to Zadok, the priest, and Abiathar, and it means the just. Zadok means the just, and Abiathar means the father of abundance, the priest. Thus and thus did Ahithophel counsel Absalom and the elders of Israel, and thus have I counseled. So they didn't rewrite this because it's just a few verses back. You can read what both of them said. Now therefore send quickly and tell David, saying, lodge not this night in the plains of the wilderness, but speedily pass over, lest the king be swallowed up and all the people that are with him. Now Jonathan and Ahiamaz stayed at En-Rogel. Jonathan, of course, means God-given. And Ahiamaz is the brother of anger. And En-Rogel is the fountain of travel of the traveler. Fountain of a traveler. Because they what? Could not be seen to come in the city. The reason they stayed there was so they wouldn't be seen coming to the city. What would that what would happen to them if they see him coming into the city? Well, someone would see him and rat him out to Absalom, which would mean their heads would be cut off. Okay? So they didn't want to be seen. They were trying to do it on the sly. And a wench or a female slave went and told them, and they went and told King David. Nevertheless, a lad saw them and told Absalom, but they went both of them away quickly and came to a man's house in Bahurim. And Bahurim means a young man's village. They went to a place for young men, a place of protection. And you know where they went? Let's look at the pattern. They were in trouble. Where did they go? Don't look at the name of the town, but where did they end up going to? A hole in the ground. They went back into what? They went back in the earth. They went back into their own carnal thinking rather than doing what God said for them to do. They went and hid. If you hide under the terms these gentlemen hid under, what would you say was their motivating factor? Fear. Absolutely. They were afraid of dying. So they went back in themselves. And that's what fear will do to you. It will drive you back into yourself and start trusting what you can do in your physical abilities versus having faith and trusting what God says. You got to be able to step out and say, you know, if you take my life, so be it. But I'm not going to compromise the position of God in my life. That's what it takes. Jesus had to say, it doesn't make any difference what you do to me because you can't do anything to me unless my Father give you the permission to do it. Correct? That's the thinking you have to have in your mind. And they went down in this court where there was a well, and they went down into it, I should say. They went down into the well. And the wife of this, the word their woman isn't really woman, it should be wife. The wife took and spread a covering over the well's face, it's the word panim, and spread what on it? There's ground corn, and there's no such thing because in this culture there was no corn. This is 16th century language that they wrote it in, and guess what they do have in England in the 16th century? Corn. So they wrote corn. But it literally was wheat. They had ground wheat spread there upon, and it was not known. It was not known that there was a well underneath it. They concealed them. Kind of sound like a church hiding behind everything else so that they don't really know who they are. Yeah, they're hiding it with religion. The humanistic thing is still there. They're hiding it in religion. And when Absalom's servants came to the wife's house, they said, "Where is Ahimaaz and Jonathan?" And the wife said to them, "They be gone over the brook of water." And when they had sought and could not find them, they returned to Jerusalem. Now, wonder what brook of water she was talking about. Jordan. The river Jordan, which is the descender of death. She said, "Oh, they're already gone. They're dead. They're gone." We all have to take a trip across the river Jordan, where we die to ourselves and come into the promised land. Okay. You all got to do it. And it said, when these sought and could not find them, they returned to where? Jerusalem is the religious capital of the world, even to this day. Religion points right to Jerusalem. Not God, religion. And if you look up the word Jerusalem, what does it say? Double, 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 double. What does two represent? Duality. And that's what religion is. It's duality. It's man and God doing something. No, it's God doing it, period. See? That's the way God is. Man, religion is where God and man works as a team, and God needs us, and you know, God don't need us. He can do anything without us. He wants us, but he wants us to do it his way. And it came to pass after they were departed that they came up out of the well and went and told King David, and said unto David, "Arise, pass over quickly over the water." Go ahead and die. Get it over with. "For thus has Ahithophel counseled against you." Then David arose. Now, don't you know that there was a descending? They were going across the river, which was death. And that tells me about something that happened in just outside of Jerusalem. What was it? The crucifixion. The descender, death, crucifixion. So it's telling you in shadow and type here there was a crucifixion. And then David did what in verse 22? I wonder what that might be. The resurrection. And look who arose with him. All the people that were with him. First fruit. All the first fruit that are in Christ arose. Didn't it say in Romans that when he died, you died with him? And when he arose, you arose with him. See? Same pattern. And David arose and all the people were with him, and they passed over Jordan. There's the death. By the morning light, by the time the day star has risen, had gone over the Jordan. So all the first fruit has to go over by the time the day star rises. Just like Jacob when he was wrestling, he wrestled all what? What was night representing? As long as we're in ignorance, we're going to be wrestling with God. But when the day star does arise in your heart, guess what? You'll grab onto him and say, "I'm not going to let you go till you bless me." You'll know who you are when the light arises. You know why? Because you'll be looking in his eyes, and you know what you're going to see there? Yourself. Look in your eye, in somebody else's eyes. You'll see yourself reflecting right back. And that's who he is. We're his identity. And when Ahithophel saw that his counsel was not followed, he saddled his ass, arose, and got him home to his house, to his city. And his city was Gilo, and it means that is one he that overturns, and put his house in order and hanged himself. Kind of sounds like somebody on the day of crucifixion, someone right before that did what? Oh my goodness, we got a pattern. See? Judas went and hanged himself. Huh, imagine that. Do you think that's a coincidence? I don't believe in them. I think it was all set up. He hanged himself and died and was buried in the sepulcher of his father. And David came to Mahanaim. And what does that mean? It's a double camp or a place of duality. David came into there. It's in Palestine. It was a Levitical city and it was a religious city. Okay? Speaks of duality, the Levitical cities. And Absalom passed over Jordan, he and all the men of Israel with him. And Absalom made Amasa, the word Amasa means burden, captain of the host instead of Joab, which was God-fathered. And Amasa was a man's son whose name or nature and character was Ithaca, which is abundance. Understanding sometimes we want to think that just because someone has a bunch of stuff of abundance, we want to think that they're really special. But you know, some of the biggest thieves I know have got abundance. The robbers and thieves. Look at the politicians. I mean, they're robbing and stealing from the public every day. They've got a lot of stuff amassed. That don't make them good, does it? They were just good at what they did, and that was stealing from people and lying. Ithra means abundance, yes. And he was an Israelite. And he really wasn't an Israelite, but yet they told him he was. They considered him an Israelite because he throwed in with them. And he went to Abigail. He went into Abigail, the daughter of Naash. He went into Abigail. What's that mean? He laid down with her. He took David's wife. Okay? And just because David was on the run, did that give him a right to go take his wife? I don't think so. Huh? Sure. You reap what you sow. Mm-hmm. And she was the daughter of who? Nahash means serpent. The sister to Zeruiah, which speaks of balsam or balm, Joab's mother. Okay? So Israel and Absalom pitched in the land of Gilead. That's a rocky region. Now, in a rocky region, what is produced there? Little rocks, sand, and dust. You know, big rocks produce little rocks, don't they? Not much coming out of that area. And that's what religion is. So Israel and Absalom was still in that rocky, dry area. They were still under the law. And that's where Passover and Pentecost experience is today. It's still under the law. And my book says it, and your book says the same thing. If you live under the law, what are you? Cursed. If you're under the law, you're yet cursed. Well, Jesus, when he died on the cross, did what? He reversed the curse. Say, I'm not living under the law no more. I'm living under grace and mercy. That's not a license to do anything you want. It is not a license. But liberty is a freedom to live as God has chosen you to live. I can't do anything I want, but I can only do what my Father wants me to do, no matter what it is. And it came to pass when David was come to Menahem, you know what that means? Two camps. I think that could also represent your Passover and Pentecostal experiences. That Shobi, the glorious one, okay, speaks of glorious, the son of Naash, son of the serpent, of Rabbah, which is great, of the children of Ammon, which is inbred or pride, and Machir, the ones that was sold into slavery, that the sons of Amiel, the people of God, of Lodabar, the pastorless, the one, the sheep without any pasture, that's where most of the people are today, and Barzillai, man, them names. Speaks of iron-hearted. The ones with no pasture usually are pretty iron-hearted, aren't they? Hard-hearted. The Gileadite, the one from the rocky region, the rocky region of, what is it? Rogelim, the place of washing. The Gileadite, the rocky region, to Rogelim, place of washing. Just to say the words is a pretty good task. So it's saying that when he came there, he's gathering everybody. Okay? I'm about to paraphrase it. He's gathering everybody in. From the lowest places, from everything that you could name, all the way to a place of, and the last place he talked of was a place of what? Washing. Or a place of cleansing. And that's what he's going to do, is bring everybody into a place of cleansing when it's time. It was David and his first fruit company that's going to do this. From the least to the greatest will know it in the covenant. And they brought beds and basins. Beds to lay on, basins for food and washing and everything else. And earthen vessels and wheat. What is the wheat? It's the word, the Passover experience, the Passover experience. And barley. Barley speaks of Pentecost. Speaks of the Pentecostal experience. And flour. Flour is the word being ingested. It's all ground up so you can ingest it. It's still somebody preparing it for you. And parched corn. And the word corn isn't there. It's parched wheat. It's the word that's been tested. It's been the word put in you. See, once you hear this word, somebody gives it to you, it's wheat. But once this word has come to you where you start to hear it, guess what it is? It becomes alive in you because the word you experience now is that word that's been in the fire. You're being tested by the word that's within you. See, we can all hear it and say, oh, that's great. But how many of you want to walk down the line where you got to be tested in it? See, there's the difference. A lot of them can say, yeah, oh, I like the word. But when you get tested in it, how many want that? Most people don't want the testing. Yeah. You got to bake the bread yourself, like Henny Penny. Yeah, or rocky soil, or it's the parable of the sowers. And beans and lentils and parched pulse. What is the parched pulse? Literally parched seeds of whatever kind for nutrients. And honey, huh? Parched seeds, just seeds. And verse 29 goes on and says, honey. And what is honey? It's the revelation of the word. When Jonathan touched his staff into the honeycomb, touched it to his mouth, what did he say happened? His eyes were enlightened. See? It's the revelation of the word. And butter. What does butter represent? It's the anointing. You rub it on. It's the anointing. And sheep. And what is sheep? That's meat. It's a food supply. It's a covering. And cheese. Now, the cheese of kind. You know what this word cheese means? It's really funny. I don't know why they put the word cheese here, because it doesn't mean that. It means to be laid bare. To be exposed. And what's a kind? It's a cow. So when you take this cheese, it's speaking of laying exposed of a clean animal. It's the exposing of a clean animal. And what are we supposed to be? We're supposed to be an example of a clean beast, right? We're not supposed to eat the unclean beast. So it's a cleansing of the exposing of the clean beast when all this stuff comes to you. And all the ingathering of all the tribes of the bad people there came in, and they brought all this good stuff to you. Now, when you realize that all the things that happen to you in your life, all the people that come and accuse you and do all kinds of evil things to you, when you get to a place where you realize that they are a gift of God to you, you know what they're going to do? Instead of being the ones attacking you, instead of the ones trying to destroy you, they're going to be your very supply of strength and resources. When you realize they're not your enemy. You know how many enemies you've got in this world? One. And it's right between your ears. It's right in here. When you realize the only enemy you've got is the way you think about things. You can walk into a room and look at it and say, this is really nice. And you come in with a different attitude, you might say, ooh, I don't like this. Did the room change? No. It's the way you think about it. And if you look at the new covenant, Jesus said, in the new covenant, if you look upon a woman to lust after her, what have you already done? You commit. See, it wasn't what you did, but it's what you think. That's what the covenant's all about. It's the thinking process. Why did he tell you numerous times to put on the mind of Christ? I got to take a different thinking process. How can I keep my own mind, Mike, and put on the mind of Christ? That'd still be two of them, wouldn't it? Two minds would be pretty confusing. One can be pretty confusing at times. How could you do it with two? And that's what people fail to realize, that this is about getting rid of my thinking totally and taking on the thinking of God, the mind of Christ. How can I think in duality with one mind? It's impossible. Okay? Because for David and for the people that were with him to eat. All this good stuff coming is for what reason? For David and the first fruits. The people that were wicked and evil and doing all the bad things brought it to David and supplied his need. The Gentile. Because they said the people is hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. I'll say that, amen. Amen. It gets hungry, thirsty, what's the other word?
Weary.
You can get hungry, thirsty, and weary in the wilderness. Everyone has a wilderness experience. Everybody goes to the desert. You got a choice. 40 days or 40 years. Which way you like it? Depends on how quick you hear what God says. How quick you submit to the hand of God in your life versus your own way. It can be 40 days like Jesus walked, or it can be 40 years like the Jewish nation walked.
What you seek is not what you pursue.
That's truth. Sometimes people play, and what's that word? Hypocritically? Any questions? Any rocks to throw?
Comments.
Comments.